Last week, I presented part one of my recent conversation with international flutist and conductor Ransom Wilson, in which he talked a bit about how he got into conducting and the main influences on his career, including Jean-Pierre Rampal, Leonard Bernstein, and Montserrat Caballé. He is in his second season as music director of the Redlands Symphony Orchestra, which was the main reason I had called him. The conversation continues with Ransom Wilson talking about the importance of foreign language study as part of life in music and about teaching. This is a conversation recorded via Skype on January 13th this year.
I'm always encouraging people to learn foreign languages because it forces you to think in a new way and see the world in a completely different way than you'd expect it. And I think a lot of what made Caballé great when she was young was the fact that she was Spanish. You know, she was able to think about music and her voice in a very particular way that was, you know, very different from how I had been brought up, and different from how a German would be brought up and that kind of thing. And I love those differences. I think they're wonderful, and I think they're essential for increasing your knowledge of the world.
Yeah, it's interesting that process of, and maybe you don't realize it until in retrospect, but the study of foreign language, how it expands the boundaries of how the mind, your mind works, or the study of music, which does the same thing.
It's an interesting topic because it's more than a theory because I know there are people actually researching this, but I kind of firmly believe that there's a reason why, Russian music sounds Russian. And it's not just that, it's not just the particular kinds of harmonies that they use, but I think there's a whole, I think a Russian's idea of what music is and what makes a good phrase is very much dictated by the language that they speak. Mm-hmm. And it makes, I noticed early, I did a little study of Russian. I don't speak it at all, but I can read the alphabet, but that's about it. But I noticed right away with most Russian music starts at the high point. The phrases invariably start, I mean, there are exceptions, but invariably a Tchaikovsky phrase will start at the highest point and then go down from there. And if it doesn't start at the very highest point, it wastes no time getting there. It's also true of Rachmaninoff and pretty much anybody you can think. And that's also kind of what happens in the language. If you've ever gotten a letter from a Russian, they don't say dear, they don't say dear Jack. They say Jack with an exclamation point. It just starts out with this really high energetic thing. And I think, that's no coincidence. German music tends to be very kind of evenly paced, as is German. And the interesting thing about German is that you very often don't find out what the action of the sentence is until the very end of it. A perfect example is me as learning my rudimentary German, I would eke out a sentence one word at a time. And all the German speakers are waiting to find out what I'm talking about because I haven't said the verb yet. And the verb being at the end, then that changes everything. And once they know what the verb is, that means there's more thinking to be done. And I think that, the German music's tendency to elide from one phrase to the next, I'm thinking of Brahms in particular, where the end of the phrase is kind of the beginning of a new phrase, and that is the beginning of yet another phrase. That happens in the language too, because of this, the verb at the end or the sometimes the preposition is at the end, you know. So you never really know. I do think that we think differently in each language. I know that I'm a different person in French. I'm really not. I have a different personality. It's amazing. You know, I have much more pitch variation when I speak. I'm more outgoing in general. I speak more quickly. It's amazing to me. And
is this the process that causes the change in someone that, say, has moved to London to study, and in 3 years they come back and they have this heavy accent? Does all that kind of play in?
I think so, yeah. I mean, you know, look at Jesse Norman, who, you know, came from the Deep South. I never heard her, you know, speak at that point, but she moved to London and ended up sounding very, very English.
I think,
and I'm from the Deep South myself, and people say that, you know, they can't hear my accent. I hear it a little bit when I hear myself speak. But the minute I go home, it all comes back. It's interesting. I mean, the brain just seems to have unlimited storage capacity.
Yeah, and it's not an act. It's the fake. It's not a fake accent it's actually.
I think you're right. I think it's a different compartment in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
That handle, you know, that handles living in London, for example,
yeah,
or that makes you into a French person briefly.
Yeah, isn't this the same?
It's fascinating.
Isn't this the same area, and the same process? Maybe those issues you may encounter with a student that where they have some relationship issues or psychological limitations, the things that they're dealing with, where it comes out in how they play or in some physical way, maybe that affects their breathing, the tension.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, teaching a German person is very different from teaching a Brazilian, for example. Because of their cultural differences, again, and I find those cultural differences important, fascinating, and wonderful. But you know, even the way they have spoken their whole lives has trained their tongue, for example, to move in particular ways and not in others. So, you know, when you're dealing with a wind instrument, where you have to have specific tongue movements and positions, sometimes their native language is in the way of a good position. I mean, Ron Paul used to say, you know, if you want to play the flute well, you have to know how to speak French, you know, which is very chauvinistic and typically, you know, typical of Frenchmen. It's like, you know, my language is the best.
Uh-huh.
But in fact, he was absolutely right, because the language of French tendency to be forward in the mouth is absolutely perfect for flute playing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that other people can't play the instrument, but they don't play with that kind of finesse. You know, no one plays the flute with as much finesse as the French. And it's just, the language is ideally suited to the instrument. But having said that, it's, you know, I often teach, you know, I have a very international class. I think I only have one American this year in my class. And there's some kind of constants in playing that at least that's, you know, my view. And they need to, you know, move their mouth in a certain way, move their tongue in a certain way. And I find that sometimes, because of the language they've spoken since birth, they have to learn anew. They can't just play and have it sound good because their tongue is doing something that isn't conducive to a good sound. And I can think of a good example. I end up teaching a lot of Korean students. The level of flute playing in Korea is extraordinarily high. And so working with Korean players, very often they will be making a rather small sound without much resonance. And I finally realized that it's because a lot of words in Korean require a rather closed jaw. And once I realized that, then I could say, don't make it like this word in Korean, make it like this instead, you know, and that immediately, of course, works.
Yeah.
But again, I find all that really fascinating. And, you know, and that's going to help their teaching too, when they take that concept forward.
Yeah. Those are important discoveries that, your wisdom then has kind of helped them bridge that gap and earlier than discovering it themselves years later. And it's interesting that to get around problems like that, simply to say do this or do that with your tongue is not enough. To tie it to something else like speaking a particular language it's more conceptual than telling somebody to do something with their tongue differently.
Right. Well, and you know, don't forget I'm no spring chicken, so I've been at this a long time.
Yeah.
But I've always enjoyed teaching, but I don't think I was a very good teacher at the beginning because I was a very natural player. And so I didn't really know how I was doing a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. But through teaching, most teachers will say, you know, when you teach, you learn more than the student does. And that's certainly true for me. Whenever I have to explain something that I understand instinctively, and I've got to figure out a way to make it into words that can be understood, then I have to think, well, I have to analyze what I'm doing. How am I doing this, you know?
Yeah.
And so I have over the years become a much better teacher. And, you know, the secret to being a great teacher is to have great students. Because if, you know, they kind of run with the ball. And, in fact, this week I was in Montreal because, one of my students at Yale, won the Montreal Symphony's Grand Prize Young Artist competition.
Yeah.
First time a flute player has ever won. It's the most important competition in Canada. And so I thought, this is important. I should go to Montreal and hear his concert. I knew he was a star from the first note that I heard him play at a summer thing in Banff a couple of years ago. But he got to Yale, and because of the unfamiliar surroundings, this often happens with the foreign students, he had to kind of learn to live in a new way. And so he wasn't making the kind of progress that I thought he should be making or would be making when he got to Yale. And it took him a while to get situated. But once I said, okay, Ben, I'm waiting for the stardom now. He went home and did it and won this big competition. So, I don't know why I even talked about that story. It's something you asked me.
Well, I think the whole thing is, you know, why would you, flute player want to take a lesson from a singer? Or, I mean, it's
right.
I guess we're talking about, you know, the teaching and learning process and the things that the information that you can pass along that maybe has nothing to do with say them they play some other instrument, but you can help them with a concept in some other way.
Well, I think again this comes with age. Is the, I'm less interested in drilling them on technical passages than I am in what is it that's motivating you for this? But I think that again, you know, as we were talking about Lenny Bernstein, we when you get the older you get, the more you the bigger picture you see. And I think that, yeah, I think that's my value for them is allowing them to see a bigger picture than just their flute playing. And whatever I'm doing is really working. I mean, I've got six superstars in my studio now, and I feel like I do very little. I feel like I just kind of let them go. I must be doing something right, but they're making rapid progress, and I often wonder why, you know, because I don't, you know, but I think I'm helping them with these big concepts, as you say. I think that's the things that really that make them think about their whole existence and their whole approach to music, and you know, and integrating music into their life in a meaningful way. And those are the things that fascinate me at this point in my life. So,
yeah.
So that's what they're getting from me, I think.